Fast am I, and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, we hear from the chairman of Port Erin Commissioners about the local authority's plans for several new developments in the area. Plans to build 130 family homes on the outskirts of Castletown threaten to destroy an important heritage landscape, according to campaigners. And the chairman of Braddon Commissioners explains to us why the TT Access Road is bad for business, the environment and residents. Port Erin Commissioners have several irons in the fire when it comes to upgrading facilities in the village, with plans afoot for a glamping site. And the Cozy Nook will remain closed next summer as the village local authority implements its long-term plan for the popular cafe. The commissioners would like to see the eatery open all year and are in the process of choosing an architect to draw up designs for the site. Well, I spoke to Nick Watterson, the chairman of the local authority, who outlined its long-term vision for the cafe.
The cafe as it is not ideal for all-year opening. So the intention is to, when we either refurb, redevelop, or whatever comes out of the consultation we're going through at the moment, hopefully we'll have something that can be open 12 months a year.
What's the condition of the building? Because that's been mentioned as a, you know, an issue at the moment, that it's not up to scratch.
Well, it's a tired old building. Some of the issues that come up in the last 12 months hadn't been raised with us before the time when the lease came into the domain. So we were caught a little bit on the hop with some of the issues that were raised by the tenant. But yeah, it's an old building, you know, it hasn't had a lot of work done over the years. So to actually just fix little bits and try and make do with what we've got is really not going to be good enough going forward for the next 30, 40 years.
And is that the sort of time frame you're looking at, a real long-lasting solution?
Oh, yeah. There's no point investing ratepayers my money at the end of the day and not having something that's substantial and that can last at least, you know, 30 years, I would suspect.
The Cozy Nook is beloved by, you know, not just people in Port Erin, people who come for the motorbiking festivals, for holidays, all around the island. Are you aware of how loved that spot is? I mean, when you're changing it, because there's a lot of passion about it.
If I said no, I'd be stupid, wouldn't I? Well, yeah. I mean, I'm from the south of the island, and I was born and brought up in Port St Mary. I lived in Port Erin for many years now. And yeah, it is. It's a great facility. And I appreciate how much that site is loved. But is that similar to 40, 50 other sites around the Isle of Man? You know, it's no different. I mean, these things have a longevity. It's not going to be there forever. It can't be, by the very fact of what it is, an old Manx stone building that's, you know, it's weathered well, but you have to do things with them, whether it's heating, electricity, roofing. You know, it has to be brought up to some sort of modern standard.
An issue that's been raised, and it's speculation at this point, of course, is that many wouldn't want to see this building turned into something like a Costa, etc., which may be attractive to from a business perspective, but in terms of the ethos of the place as a community site, that's something that I think some were wary of.
Yeah, and quite rightly too. It wouldn't be my intention to have a franchise of that sort running it as the tenant. We would like to see, ideally, I think, somebody who is independent, wants to put their heart and soul in it. I'm not decrying, you know, what Costa and these types of chains bring to, you know, certain localities. I mean, I'm sure they're loved for where they are. Certainly, if you go to Ramsey, the one in Murrett Park, it's full all the time. It's not everyone's cup of tea or a cup of coffee, And but no, it isn't our intention to have something that can be seen in any high street or location.
So how would you describe the relationship between the local authority and the tenants?
Well, how would I describe it? Well, I've known the tenants personally for many, many years, and I'd class them as friends of mine. The situation really sort of took a turn for the worse when we advised them that the lease was going to be running out and they'd have to re-tender for it. I think we're all aware of the situation, how it deteriorated to the fact that it was railings put up and it was closed. It is what it was at that particular time. And so, you know, there's not a lot more to say about that.
But I mean, how is it now? Is it?
At the moment, I would say just workmanlike. It's no different or it's no better or worse than it was maybe
should you tender for bidders, and would you entertain?
Yeah, we have to do that. Yeah, that's the whole point. The lease was running out, and we're obliged to put it out to tender again. There was no way around that because this period of time, the maximum period of time for the lease had been, it was expiring. As it happens, we decided that at the end of this particular lease, because of the work that needed doing on the property, it was time to bite the bullet and let's see what we can do with it and do something proper with some sort of long-term vision in mind. That means, unfortunately, that next summer, more likely than not, well, virtually 100%, it won't be open because the works that we need to do on it will not allow that. Yeah. And once the works are complete, we'll put it out to tender.
And have you got a budget for these plans? Or I mean, I know they're still in development.
Very early stages yet. At the moment, we are in the process of choosing the preferred architect. At that point, we will then be looking into more detailed designs with that architect. And obviously, each design is going to have a cost to it. And each cost is something that we have to look at itself. So it's going to be a balance between what we'd like and what we can afford, but looking at something that's substantial and can be there for many years.
And is there going to be an opportunity for the public to have a say at any point in this process?
Well, we'd like, I think once we get our preferred option drawn up, we would ask the public for their views. I suspect that regardless of what was put out there, you're going to generate heat on one side of the argument or the other. I suspect that if we put something virtually the same in place or retained the building and did a complete refurb, we'd have people saying, well, you've lost an opportunity. On the other hand, I suspect that if we went and we had some, as Prince Charles may call, a carbuncle, some modern visionary building, well, we're going to upset everyone who wants to see a white cafe at the end of the...
So you think backlash either way, I suppose, just
well,
because
to be honest, yes.
That's how...
Yeah. And, of course, this type of discussion is polarised on social media.
They all are.
Which they all are, which, yeah, absolutely. And so, I don't think we're going to please everybody, that's for sure.
But you're certain it's the right thing to be doing?
Well, we have to do something with it. To keep patching it up is not a long-term solution. And I think everybody would agree that they want something permanently there. That's certainly probably the common thread that's come through whatever you hear.
Another ambitious plan, yet to go to planning, glamping. Now, we've been here before in a different guise in Port Erin, but what made the commissioners come back on this issue and try again?
Well, I think it was really around the fact we'd spotted a bit of land that we thought could be used. And it was really the availability or thinking there's a chance of developing some sort of site. It was really led by that rather than, we must have a glamping site at all costs. I mean, that was never the agenda, but we've spotted a piece of land. We've had negotiations with the owners. We've got a draft contract that we'll go ahead and purchase the land, but subject to making sure we've got the planning in place for the site.
Now, where is it, just so people are aware?
It's the field heading out on Ballafezan Road towards Ballafezan Corner. On the right-hand side, you've got the field that's designated for Nomads Rugby Pitch and other facilities. It's the field opposite that on the other side of the road. So, you know, I think it's important, though, to say straight off that it's subject to planning. And we don't want to be doing anything without the consent of the people who live in that area. You know, we don't want to be upsetting anybody. And that's why we've gone into this process and making that one of the conditions. You know, it's a large field, and we think we can design the facility in such a way that it doesn't impose on the residents in that area. I also think that as a long-term project, it protects them from possibility of
big development,
further residential growth. Again, which wouldn't be seen to be in the interests of them and probably Rushen Parish Commissioners, because we like that green belt in between the two locations. So we think it's a great idea. We're having an open day in the Commissioner's office where anyone can come and have a look at what we think might work. So we're getting people involved at an early stage, which I think is important in all these things. You know, we're not going out there. I think when it first came, you know, the headlines on the on the boards outside the paper shops, it sort of suggests that, hey, we're doing it. We'd like to do it. We think it's a good idea. And I think it will complement to a degree the facilities that will be across the road. Something that's all about outdoors, something about recreation. So you'll have the two sites sort of adjacent to each other. So I think it would work well.
And is that an offer that's something different from what you've currently got in Port Erin? And also, are you seeing this bit of land and thinking, there's not many other places we could be doing this, and we've got to take this opportunity?
Yeah, well, as you know, we put planning in previously for a field or a site up on Rowney, and that fell foul of planning. Mm. Yeah, there's very little in the way of open land, well, import, air imports of Mary or Russian, that's, you know, zoned for anything other than farming or whatever. So to get an opportunity like this doesn't come along often. So I thought it just seems a good idea to do it. And I think, again, just going back to the point, it means it's protecting that green space, albeit it's being used, it's still recreation. Mm. And, you know, and it sort of rolls into the golf course area as well. So, you know, we'll hopefully have a great facility which matches up with all that green open space.
Like with the other project we were discussing, has there been any costs publicly bandied around yet, or are we still all sort of in the development phase?
At the moment, we know what the cost of the field would be to us, but that's private at the moment, and we will be getting costings for putting some of the basic infrastructure in that plot of land. Again, it's really early stages, and we didn't want to be going too far ahead and jumping the gun. A lot of these things, whether it's costings or whatever, you know, there's a cost involved in those as well, and we don't want to be wasting ratepayers' money getting here's a specific plan and it's cost us thousands of pounds to do when it's going to potentially not go through. Yeah, that might sound a little bit vague, but it seems to be the best way to do it at the moment. Do these bits incrementally and see how it pans out.
In terms of the board, do you have any preference for what you'd like to see? I mean, there was things such as glamping pods that we've seen in other places. There was a motorhome area mooted. There was a couple of ideas floating around for what could be there.
Yeah, I think, again, that's a wish list. You know, you've got a large site there.
But you put them out there, so yes, there must be something behind them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that field could be planned to have traditional sort of camping facility in one area. The glamping pods, which was the real driver, I suppose, for it, because those things are more substantial. You don't have all the issues with waterlogging in areas where you have your traditional camping sites. Mm. And, you know, if we can fit in a certain amount of spaces for camper vans with electricity points, well, it all adds to the mix. It doesn't mean that we're sort of precluding people because you can't have a camper van on the site. Mm. Or you can't bring your tent and stick it up in that corner. It was really trying to get the best mixed use out of that field, I think. But as I said, it's, you know, we've had sort of rough ideas drawn up, but nothing that's really substantial. But we'll see what comes out at the meeting, which is the open day.
Chairman of Port Erin Commissioners, Nick Watterson. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Plans to build 130 family homes on the outskirts of Castletown threaten to destroy an important heritage landscape, according to some campaigners. The group is looking to protect the area surrounding the Golden Meadow Mill, arguing its significance would be undermined by the proposed development. One of the campaigners is Jacob O'Sullivan, who grew up at the mill. He explained to me the area's historical significance.
I grew up at Golden Meadow Mill, which is a very historic group of buildings directly adjacent to the fields in question. And also, really, I'm interested in this just, I suppose, from somebody with a great love of Castletown and a great interest in its future.
And these collection of buildings, can you just tell us a little bit about the history behind them and why they're significant?
Yeah, sure. So the Golden Meadow Mill, which is a group of mill buildings on the outskirts of Castletown, just north of Alexander Road, over the railway line. There's been a mill on the site since at least 1511. There's been one recorded since then. The current building dates from at least 1816, and it was built when Castletown was the capital of the island. It has a very intrinsic relationship with the town and with the wider countryside around it. The mill has been extensively restored, so it was in use until the late 70s, and then it has been restored and much of the original machinery remains. There's also an extensive structure behind, which is the mill pond and the mill race, which extends for about half a mile behind it to the weir further up the Silverburn River. And the tail race goes down through the town, through the back of Athol Terrace and Hope Street. The mill itself was used for centuries and has had a very important part in the life of the town. It's 5 floors big and was used for flour milling and animal feed. There's a thrashing mill next to it. The yard has also been used as a rope walk and a smithy. So you can see it's really been at the heart of the social and industrial life of the town. There's two great wheels, which turned the thrashing mill on one side and one which turned the mill itself. And like I say, that there's four grinding stones inside, and it's been extensively restored. And we offer tours of it occasionally as well. This year we've had more visitors than we've had in, I think, 25 years. So it's been really good, and it's hopefully people can see the importance of the building to the town. The mill gives its name to some of the streets in the town as well. So you have Mill Road, Mill Street, Milner Terrace, Millhope Close, all of which are named because they are the approach roads to the mill.
Has the restoration come about due to the work of volunteers? Because it's not an M&H site. Who runs it?
Well, it's been restored over many years, really gradually. And I wasn't born when restoration started, but a lot of the machinery was left intact. So it's been quite a long process, which is continuing now. On restoring the machinery, as well as restoring some of the buildings. The kiln room, which is quite a rare example, dating to 1919, was in a bad state and was recently restored and repaired, and access is granted to that as well. And it's ongoing. Like I say, there's been work on restoring some of the machinery in the past year. So
how would this application, it is substantial, there are lots of things inside it, like plans for sheltered housing, community centre, a care home. How do you envisage that it would impact that area?
Well, we are really concerned about the whole development for a number of reasons. I suppose from a heritage point of view, we are keen to emphasise the fact that the mill was built on open land outside of the town, and it connected to the town but also the countryside that it serves. It's unusual because most of the registered buildings in Castletown, of which of course there are many, are based around the harbour and the square areas. There's only two, I think, registered groups of buildings north of this, one of which is the mill and the other one is King William's College. But important to understanding it is its context within open land on the edge of the town, and to urbanize the fields directly around it would completely destroy that context and therefore I think really destroy an important heritage landscape.
But do you not accept there has to be a balance with preserving things in their context, like you said, and the need for development, the need for homes?
Yeah, surely. I think we do also have numerous other concerns about the site. We just think it's really not the appropriate place to develop. I mean, firstly, much of the site is directly under the airport public safety zone, which can't be built on anyway. The application has dealt with this by putting a sort of meadowland in between, as they call it, but the regulations forbid people from congregating, and there's perhaps a care home on one side and houses on the other side, so surely people would congregate there. The care home that is planned is directly abutting the artificial line of the public safety zone. It doesn't seem a safe place, and the NHS have linked living underneath a flight path to poor levels of health, in particular amongst the elderly. It's quite inappropriate for that reason. Also, in the area plan for the south, so in various government documents, they've acknowledged this, and the site actually wasn't put forward in that plan because of the massive impact it would have on landscape. Castletown to the north, the settlement boundary ends at Alexander Road and the railway line. To extend to the north seems a very inappropriate way to extend Castletown. Alexander Road really is an extension of the Castletown bypass, and you know, you can't bypass if there's town on either side. There's various reasons to have concerns, I think. There's been two other large sites planned in the town at Qualtrough Field behind Moons and at Mock Russian. And this is for a further, I think they said, 130 houses. If you think this site will be completely cut off whenever the Southern Hundred is on, and you know, if there's a care home there, that brings up all sorts of questions if there's an emergency, and there's all these people stuck in there as well. Also, if you think about now on Mully Road, whenever there's, I mean, the entrance is almost opposite the football club, whenever there's a match on, you know, that road's covered in parking. I think that'll create its own difficulties. Also, from that site, the main entrance into town is along Mully Street, which, you know, is a very small street and is already rather busy at the moment. And also, I suppose, in a more general way, the school capacity. There was a Freedom of Information request in the summer, and it showed that Vic Road Primary School will be at capacity with a further 39 students. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the two other developments, and also this one, with, as I quote, 130 family homes, the implications that would have on school capacity as well.
Will you be bringing your concerns to Castletown commissioners?
Yeah, definitely. We've already spoken to a few commissioners and invited some round as well. Just, I suppose, to, like you say, to really raise awareness of what is at the mill and the importance of the site and the landscape around it. And we're very keen to continue conversations with the commissioners there and MHKs involved as well.
The TT access road is bad for business, the environment and residents in Braddon. According to the chair of the parish commissioners, Andrew Jessop says the route is unfit to serve the island during the racing period, with congestion causing pollution and delaying access to the hospital, amongst other issues. Talks have been held now between the local authority and the Department of Infrastructure on a potential scheme to alleviate some of these problems. Mr. Jessop told me that Braddon commissioners are keen to see a solution brought forward.
In this year, we had almost every day during certainly the Festival of Motorcycling an issue with a vehicle either breaking down or stopping for one reason or other on the access road, which led to queues back to Johnny Watterson's lane and beyond. So you've got people sat in their vehicles, not only the vehicles getting hot, but also the people inside getting rather hot and bothered. It's not good for the environment either, in the sense that you've got all these cars sat stationary pumping out fumes, which obviously affects our local residents, but basically it's just causing problems for people getting to and from the hospital and, as I say, causing an awful lot of unnecessary bother for people.
And has it been getting noticeably worse?
Well, certainly if you think back to when the TT Access Road was introduced, which was about 30 years ago, there was nowhere near the volume of traffic trying to get in and out of the area inside the TT course. You know, since then, the hospital's grown dramatically. The volume of people trying to get to appointments, etc., at the hospital, or just get to and from their homes, because, again, there's been additional homes built on that inside area, Johnny Watson's Lane area. It's just making it more and more difficult for people to go about their daily life.
And I suppose could be exasperated by plans there in the eastern area plan, should there be more development in that area?
Certainly at the moment, there's a number of areas that have been earmarked for development, either straight away or as reserve sites. So yeah, the potential for additional congestion is only going to grow.
What are the commissioners hoping to do with this? You probably aware more than others of the myriad issues that are caused by this inadequate road and the closures. What's the action plan, I suppose, for getting something done about this?
We were concerned enough to raise the issue with our MHK, who brought the matter up in Keys and Tynwald, and as a result of that, the DOI have agreed to look at a scheme to try and alleviate some of these problems. We've had a meeting only this week with representatives of the department, who seem very receptive to the ideas of trying to improve things, both for residents and businesses in that area, because there's a number of businesses that get cut off for several weeks in the year. Plus, also address our other concern is that we've been trying to develop a traffic-free route for pedestrians and cyclists from one side of the island to the other. But under the current arrangement, when the TT access road is open, you can't walk along part of that stretch. And certainly it's not the most enjoyable experience trying to cycle along it either. So hopefully, as a result of some forward planning or forward thinking by the DOI, we hopefully might come up with something that meets the needs of all users.
You've been involved through speaking to your MHK, you've had this meeting. I'm sure there'll be further consultation about what the DOI ends up producing by way of possible solutions. But what possible solutions have the commissioners investigated? You must have an idea of where you think certain roads could go.
Well, certainly we had thought that it was going to need a two-way flow, you know, the full length of whatever route was taken. We obviously wanted to take the traffic out of the River Walk area, which is obviously the bane of the residents' life, having traffic going through their residential estate. So, yeah, we were looking at land that effectively was in government ownership further along the valley, which could potentially be a route through there. We're also saying there may be other areas that we can look at in order to, again, enable residents of Snugborough and some of the businesses in Snugborough to actually get in and out during the closed road periods. So, yeah, we've made a few suggestions. There may be a route that's opened up that is only used during TT road closures for people to use, and maybe for buses at the other times of the year, which might address this perennial problem we've had, you know, from residents complaining about the amount of traffic on Strang Road, particularly buses. So, you know, we can perhaps, hopefully, deal with two or three problems all in one go.
And you said there, but have residents come to you on this issue and said, look, it's not acceptable at the moment what we're having to deal with, particularly those who... homes are, you know, right outside this sort of thoroughfare during TT?
Well, certainly we've had representations on a number of occasions from people that aren't particularly happy with the situation, and we can, you know, sympathise with them. So, yes, if we can come up with a route that satisfies the needs of as many people as possible and doesn't cost an absolute fortune to do, then it's something that will enable us to continue with the TT races, which I'm a great supporter of, but also, you know, reduce the amount of disruption to those people that perhaps aren't such big fans.
If you look at the bigger picture with the access road and the congestion around it, do we need to be doing more to encourage people to park and ride, whatever you want to call it, leave their vehicles outside of town, walk in, cycle in, whatever?
Well, I think people have suggested that visitors to the capital, or, you know, whether they're working, shopping or whatever, modify their journeys during that period anyway to try and miss some of the more congested periods. It might not always be possible to change your appointment at the hospital, etc. But yeah, I think we really do need to do more about encouraging people to look at alternatives.
Andrew Jessop, Chair of Braddon Commissioners. That's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week, and you can access this episode again as a podcast online. But for now, have a very good evening.